What do the most successful growing businesses have in common? They're working together in Slack. Slack is where work happens with all your people, data, and information in one AI-powered place. Grow your business in Slack. Visit slack.com to get started.
Nationwide protests as U.S. states and abortion providers confront a new legal landscape. Plus, Ukraine's president calls for support as G7 leaders gather.
In the run-up to the summit, he reiterated his demand for more weapons, for artillery, for aerial defenses, and we think that the leaders answered positively to some of his demands.
And why car makers are hiking EV prices. It's Monday, June 27th. I'm Luke Vargas with The Wall Street Journal. Here's the AM edition of What's News, the top headlines and business stories moving your world today. The U.S. and its group of seven allies have laid out an infrastructure investment plan for developing countries in a bid to challenge China's Belt and Road program. President Joe Biden at the G7 summit in Germany pledged $200 billion toward the Partnership for Global Infrastructure over the next 5 years. A spokesman for the Chinese embassy in Washington said that Beijing welcomed all development initiatives, but cautioned countries against exporting their own values. Meanwhile, Russia has defaulted on its foreign debt for the first time since 1918. The country missed payments on two foreign currency bonds as of late Sunday, according to holders of the bonds. A default had been long in coming since Western sanctions created payment obstacles that Moscow couldn't overcome. Russia has accused the West of manufacturing an artificial default. We'll have more on the G7's ongoing discussions about further sanctions on Russia later in the show. Abortion providers in several states across the U.S. have halted services in the wake of the Supreme Court's decision to overturn Roe v. Wade, while supporters and opponents began to shift their focus to pill-based abortions and how new restrictions would be enforced. In the wake of last Friday's decision, anti-abortion and abortion rights activists rallied across the U.S. over the weekend.
Rise up for abortion!
WSJ national politics reporter Josh Jamerson in Washington says that both the Democratic and Republican parties hope to seize political momentum following Friday's verdict.
The Democratic Party on Friday announced that it had started a new organizing website for volunteers and supporters of abortion rights to sign up the text and make calls to people to get them to go out and vote for Democrats this fall. Republicans haven't been as vocal about how they're going to organize around conservative principles of being pro-life. To the extent that we've seen or heard from Republicans talk about abortion on the campaign trail, they've sought to cast Democrats as being pro-late-term abortion and using that in a negative light.
And the Switzerland-based Bank of International Settlements, known as the Central Bank for Central Banks, is urging countries to raise interest rates quickly, even if it significantly hurts growth. According to the bank, that is to avoid a risk of returning to the 1970s, in which high inflation becomes entrenched and self-reinforcing. WSJ correspondent Tom Fairless has more on why the BIS says that recent rate hikes from the likes of the US, Australia, Canada, and Norway don't go far enough.
Across advanced economies, interest rates are still negative after adjusting for inflation. That means the central banks, rather than slowing their economies, are actually still stimulating their economies.
High gas prices may be prodding more people to consider trading in their gasoline-powered cars for an electric vehicle. But EV prices aren't staying flat, with the likes of Tesla, Ford, and GM all marking up their electric options in response to soaring demand and rising costs. WSJ reporter Mike Colias covers the automotive industry for us from Detroit, and he joins us now. Hey, Mike.
Hey, thanks for having me on.
Thank you for being with us. So tell us about the higher material costs for EV batteries in particular. And when we talk about higher prices for finished cars, how high are we talking?
Yeah, well, a lot of what's driving everything up, it's high demand. Nickel, for example, is big in Ukraine. And so that's been a problem. And it's just general supply chain choppiness that's been plaguing the auto industry for the last 2 years. So these key ingredients that go into batteries for EVs, lithium, nickel, cobalt, roughly doubled since the pandemic. Over the past year, you've seen a 22% increase in the price that EVs are going for straight off the lot. And that's a bigger increase than for gas-powered cars.
And Mike, how is the auto industry responding to these increased ingredient prices?
Well, you're seeing the car companies raise prices just in the last few months pretty dramatically. I mean, Tesla, General Motors, Ford, even the startups Rivian, Lucid, in some cases 10, 15% in one fell swoop. And it's partly because of the cost inflation that we talked about, the rising cost of raw materials that go into batteries, but it's also there's huge demand. I mean, there's not that many of these EVs on the market. There's big early adopter demand for these cars. There's a 2-year waiting list in a lot of cases. And so the car companies are saying, well, why not charge more if so many people want our product?
I imagine, though, there is a longer term concern here that if the price pressure keeps making EVs more expensive, these companies won't be able to essentially undercut gasoline powered alternatives, no?
For sure. Yeah. If the raw material costs stay as high as they are now, it does present a problem for this transition, especially for companies who don't have sort of an interim option like a hybrid. So Ford, Toyota, they're really strong on hybrids. Companies that have sort of walked away from that hybrid space, GM, Volkswagen, could have a tougher time because the cost that goes into an EV, it looks like it's going to remain elevated for a while. You're kind of faced with sticker shock both at the pump and at the dealership at this point when it comes to EVs. So for example, you know, one pretty popular version of the Tesla's Model Y at the end of 2021 was selling for just about $59,000. And now it is on sale for $66,000. So that's a $7,000 jump in just 6 months. It's pretty dramatic.
That was Wall Street Journal reporter Mike Colias, who covers the automotive industry for us from Detroit. Mike, thank you so much.
You bet. Thank you.
Coming up, we'll head to Germany for an update on the Group of Seven Leaders Summit as the world's wealthy democracies seek agreement on expanded sanctions against Russia. That story after the break.
You're a growing business and you can't afford to slow down. If anything, you could probably use a few more hours in the day. That's why the most successful growing businesses are working together in Slack. Slack is where work happens, with all your people, data, and information in one AI-powered place. Start a call instantly in huddles and ditch cumbersome calendar invites. Or build an automation with Workflow Builder to take routine tasks off your plate. No coding required. Grow your business in Slack. Visit slack.com to get started.
The leaders of the seven leading rich countries meeting in Germany this week are expected to agree on further sanctions against Russia over its invasion of Ukraine. Earlier, Ukrainian President Volodymyr Zelensky addressed the G7 summit. WSJ Germany correspondent Bojan Panchevsky has been following along with developments, and he joins us now with more. Hi, Bojan.
Hi, Luke.
President Zelensky spoke this morning. Do we know what he said and how G7 leaders responded?
We don't know exactly what he said because he tuned in via a confidential video link with the seven leaders. But in the run-up to the summit, he reiterated his demand for more weapons, for diverse weapons, for heavy weapons, for artillery, for aerial defenses, and we think that the leaders answered positively to some of his demands. Certainly, the United States announced shortly before he joined the summit that the United States would be sending an aerial defense system to defend Ukrainian positions from attacks from Russia, and that they will be sending more and newer artillery systems without specifying what. So I think they got the ball rolling, and I think slowly, slowly they are answering his demands. German diplomats were also saying that Germany might contribute some more weapons shipments for Ukraine, basically.
Bojan, sanctions on Russia were also on the agenda for this summit. Do we know what new sanctions G7 leaders might be ready to impose on Russia?
Yes, indeed. It's a new package of sanctions that they've agreed. They have to be kind of fleshed out at the ministerial level, but for now they agreed to start working on some sort of cap of the price of Russian oil. Essentially, that means kind of forming a cartel of buyers who will say, we will not buy over this price. No matter what you ask us to pay Russia, we will not pay over this price. So take it or leave it. The second thing they agreed is to ban the imports of Russian gold. Russian gold, after energy exports, after gas, coal and oil, gold is the kind of highest revenue commodity for the Kremlin. This will be worked out that G7 countries and their allies will simply stop buying Russian gold. And they also agreed on a package of new sanctions against specific companies and research institutes that contribute to the Russian military-industrial complex in order to kind of kneecap further the Russian capability to fight the war in Ukraine. Especially the Germans and some other European countries are quite concerned that the sanctions in the short term are actually backfiring because they're providing a bigger revenue for Vladimir Putin's war chest. And that certainly has been true so far. It could well happen that the gold sanctions cause the same result. So there is a great concern. I mean, experts are saying that this will be temporary, that all these effects are temporary, that in the kind of short term, as the volumes reduce, the effect of the sanctions will kick in and eventually they will starve the Russian treasury of funds. But the question is, when will that happen and how long we'll have to wait for that? Because obviously, the most important thing is the sanctions to have an effect on Putin's ability to wage war on Ukraine. And I think it's not quite clear as to the timing of the actual effect.
Do you see this summit demonstrating a united front among the G7 leaders, or are there indications that there are some cracks emerging in how they feel about the war in Ukraine and sanctions against Russia?
Well, certainly they've worked hard in the run-up to the summit and during the summit not to show any cracks in the unity of the G7. They've presented a united front. Take the example of the oil cap. That was originally American proposal, as well as the gold ban. So essentially, the European members of G7 were not that happy with it, and they were not very keen on having that discussion at all at the G7, but because the Americans insisted, they accepted. Of course, it remains to be seen how they agree on the details, but certainly there was a strong sense in Germany, for example, which is holding the rotating presidency of the G7 and hosting the summit in the Bavarian Alps, that they do not want to send any message of dissent. So even though they were skeptical about aspects of the American proposals, they absolutely supported them and they work hard in order to kind of make them happen.
Bojan Panchevsky is the Wall Street Journal's Germany correspondent. Bojan, thank you as always.
Thank you, my pleasure.
And finally, an ancient mosque dating back to the first few centuries of Islam has been discovered in the Israeli desert, according to the Israel Antiquities Authority. WSJ breaking news reporter Omar Abdelbaki says the discovery provides new details of early Islamic history.
The Israeli government said that the discovery of the mosque signifies the change in the region that was happening 1,200 years ago. I think it's really a culturally significant, maybe uniting for the three religious groups in Israel, Christians, Muslims, and Jews, because in that region they found Christian houses next to Muslim dwellings and next to ancient mosques. And also in the Negev Desert, there are ancient synagogues and ancient churches. So this is a big discovery for that reason.
And that's What's News for Monday morning. We'll be back tonight with a new show. I'm Luke Vargas with the Wall Street Journal. Thanks for listening.
What do the most successful growing businesses have in common? They're working together in Slack. Slack is where work happens with all your people, data, and information in one AI-powered place. Grow your business in Slack. Visit slack.com to get started.